Welcome on into the 8 o'clock hour. Chris Thomas tonight. Turtle hanging out with you till 10. I got producer G screening your calls. We still got full phone lines, people, so we're just going to keep talking because this Falcon season is at a absolute critical mass, and we got to talk about it. And right now we're talking specifically, again, this is what I'm talking about tonight, peeps. You got one job to do, and your job is on the line if you don't do it. Can you? Because that's what Zach Robinson, TJ Yates, and everybody else, that's what they're looking at, y'all. If they can't get Michael Penix Jr. back on track, if they can't get this thing going again, I don't see a path forward for them to return next year. I just don't. I don't see how they can do it. So, again, you got one job. You got one job. Can you do it? 404-726-0929. Tate is in – or I'm sorry, is it – how do you say your name? I don't want to screw it up again.
It's T from Decatur.
Oh, T, hey, what's Turtle. Up, man? Go ahead.
Hey, man, check me out, man. What I want people to do, I know it's hard, but when you think about 98 and then you think about 2018, it's not like we've had a phenomenal franchise over the course of since we've had this team. So what I want is to build some continuity. In order to do that, we got to have some stability. And how can we have stability when we're firing coaches every 3 years? Every 5 years. That's not how it's done. Some kind of way, all of that stuff, I understand what you're saying. Results matter. It's a result league. You got to produce. Having said that, at some point, we're going to say, hey, this is our coach. This is our coordinator. They're going to learn together. They're going to build together. And eventually, we're going to have to see some production. We can't just, okay, we fired offensive coordinator last year. We got another one this year. Then what, we're going to fire him and Penix is going to be on his third one in 3 years?
Well, hang on, T, and I'll let you finish. Here's the problem with your theory. Again, another caller brought this up earlier, too. I'm fine with that if you didn't have the weight of seven playoffless seasons on your shoulders. But they do.
But that's the first time. Right? Yeah, it's not the first time. Like I said, 98 to 2018, we Super Bowl and then nothing and Super Bowl. I'm saying so it's like this: the city hasn't – we hadn't won in football like that. So I understand what you're saying. But feel me right now, Turtle. I'm saying, like, let's build something so we can have some continuity and consistency so that we can, like, you know what? All right, we know what to expect. They know what to expect. We know what we are. We know who we are, who the coach wants us to be. And the only thing is revolving door should be a couple of players
in the draft. Do you think it's fair to ask this fan base to be patient for another couple of years?
What I think is, based on what's been going on, we ain't really got a choice. We're going to have to be patient because this ain't the product that we're seeing and what's going on right now. It's not a playoff a team right now. So we don't have a choice.
Well, listen.
I appreciate you taking my call.
Yeah, of course, man. That's not acceptable, T. That's the problem at the end of the day. That is not an acceptable outcome. You know what the definition of insanity is? We say it on the show all the time. Doing the same thing over and over and over again and expecting a different result. The Falcons cannot continue to be insane. 404-726-0929. Travis is in Covington. Travis.
Yes, sir. Here's the deal with being content with what's going on. The ownership of this team set the standard with Mike Smith. We had the winningest coach in franchise history, the only coach that's ever won back-to-back seasons up to that point, and they let him go because things got stale. Dan Quinn come in, took us to a Super Bowl, fell off. They let him go because we wasn't ever going back to what we used to be. Arthur Smith came in, and you can argue, had the worst roster in the league. And with the worst roster in the league and one of the lowest paid rosters in the league, he still won seven games. And now with all this talent, Raheem, Coach Morris, is struggling to even get back to the numbers that Arthur Smith was at with Desmond Ridder and his roster that he had. So I understand when folks want to wait and want to wait and want to wait, but Coach Morris has a track record. This is the record he had when he filled in Atlanta. This is the record he had when he was Tampa Bay's head coach. And now on round number two, we're right back here again with a lot of the same staff members that was here before. And as a fan, as a season ticket holder, we spend thousands and thousands of dollars, and we expect the ownership to live up to the standard that they set, that we're not going to be happy with just being stale after having winning seasons. But yet here we are year after year, and you and I tweeted back and forth before the year started that anything less than 10 wins this year is considered a failure, and I'm standing strong on that. Anything less than 10 wins with this roster, with this talent, is a failure. And if it wasn't for the defense playing at the level that Ulbrich has them playing, I don't even see any bright spots in this whole organization, team, or anything else at the moment.
No, I agree. It's a great call. 404-726-0929. Thanks for checking in. I agree. I said 11 wins. 10. I said 11. And they're not even – they may not get half that at this point. Travis, that's the unfortunate part. James is in Chamblee. James.
Hey, what's going on?
Yo.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yep, I got you. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah. I'm a Chicago Bears fan, so I understand. And I live here in Atlanta, and I like the Falcons, so I don't want to, you know, start off that way. But here's the deal. Everybody in Chicago is hating Caleb Williams, ready to ship him out. And I kept saying, it's the coaching. It's the coaching. You got to find the coaching here in Atlanta for Penix. You get the right coaching, all of a sudden it changes the paradigm. It's real simple. It's not Penix. It's not the problem. It is coaching. And I don't know how people in Atlanta just have to accept that. And I think they have. It's time to ship this coaching staff out of Atlanta. Period.
It's hard to make the
argument.
Yeah, you got it. It's hard to make the argument. He's 20 games under 500 as a head coach. It's hard to make the argument sitting here at 3-6 that Raheem Morris is a good NFL head coach. It's just hard. It's difficult. I can't sit here and defend him right now. He has not on a consistent basis had this team ready to win football games on a day-in, day-out basis. And that is his job, number one. Number two, Michael Penix. First, or it's like one and 1A. Number one is the team. Number two is Penix specifically. And he has failed in both of those areas. How can I argue that with the caller? I can't and I won't, right? Barring an immaculate turnaround this season, he will have been, it's unfortunate to use this word, but a failure as the head coach of the Atlanta Falcons. Those are just the facts. That's not even an arguable thing at this point. Kathy's in Atlanta. Kathy.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi, Turtle. Hello. Yes, I'm calling in. I want to start off by saying I do think Penix is the future for the quarterback, but I do have to say this. Unfortunately, last year should have been the year they expected some when they hired Kirk Cousins. He's sitting on the bench now, and then they put Penix in at the very end of the season. He's a rookie. He's still a rookie. He only played like two games at the end. So, yes, it is a coaching problem, but he's a rookie. And unfortunately, like all the other rookies, like Bryce, Caleb, he's a rookie. He has to learn, and y'all have to give him that grace.
Yeah,
Kathy. So that's all I want to say.
No, I appreciate it. Listen, the only problem is, again, is it's hard to give him the grace when you're expected to make the playoffs. That's the difference between Bryce in his first year and Caleb in his first year and everybody else, Josh Allen in his first year. These guys that are drafted high go to bad teams. That's the problem. Michael Penix Jr. didn't get drafted to a bad team. He got drafted to a middling team that was expected to ascend and end a seven-year playoff drought. And he is not playing up to those standards right now, Kathy, to your point. But is he the future? Absolutely. You would be foolish and foolhardy to give up on this guy right now. I am certainly not. Ricky is in Covington. Ricky.
Hey, Turtle. How you doing tonight, man?
I'm great. What's up?
One thing I like about you, Turtle, is you keep it 100. More than anybody else on 96.9, well, 92.9, rather, you keep it 100. But let me just break this down to you. I've heard some of the most asinine calls tonight that I've ever heard from the Atlanta Falcons fan base. First and foremost, if you go back, let's look at coaching. First, why are you bringing a first-year offensive coordinator in, and then you're going to draft Kirk Cousins, and then you're going to draft a rookie? Coaching. We're not talking about anything else. Coaching. So you brought in the first year, you brought in your defensive coordinator. Didn't work out. Coaching. How can Michael Penix learn what it is to be an NFL quarterback if he doesn't have an offensive coordinator to teach him the ropes? If this is his first year, how is it going to help him to develop? Penix is not the problem. I don't care what nobody says. The guy looks confused. He can't hear in the radio. He can't hear in the calls are not coming in fast enough. That's not his problem. But now you get him in the midst of 97,000 people that are screaming down at him, and he's confused. Coaching. then also you got to start looking at it. Why are we not using, what the coach said is the best football player in the NFL? After that Buffalo Bills game, Bijan, it's like he's a non-factor coaching. Let me say this, and I'm getting ready to close up. Two things. One, the defense can only do but as much as the defense can do. If you're out there, if you're constantly going three and out, I heard them say earlier on Dukes and Bell that they was out there for a total of 9 seconds on three plays. The defense doesn't even have the time to catch their breath. So what do you expect? Coaching. So we took care of that with Brick. The last thing is this. If anybody needs to get fired, anybody, and I'm with you, this is a results-driven league. The NFL means not for long, which means if you don't get this man out of the pistol, if you don't throw something else at defenses to the point where defenses are confused with the plays that we're running, if you don't take the training wheels off of Michael Penix, if you don't start running Tyler Allgeier, if we're not doing these things and holding Kyle Pitts accountable and stop throwing to Darnell Moody, then somebody's going to get fired. Thank you so much for taking my call, Turtle. I appreciate
it. Appreciate the kind words, Ricky. Yeah, again, to your last point, yes, that is exactly what is going to happen, Ricky, if they do not turn this thing around immediately. Pink slips aplenty. Try saying that five times fast. Pink slips aplenty, I believe, will be given out at the end of the season if everything that Ricky just said does not come to fruition. Eric is in Alpharetta. Eric.
Hey, Turtle. How's it going?
What's up, me?
Oh, man. Just another day, another doing this.
Yeah.
Hey, so, all right. So there's a couple things. First thing, yes, actually, John Gruden can 100% coach. The Giants, actually, yesterday were inquiring about him. So it's kind of like at that situation. Second thing, Penix obviously not the problem. It's obviously the coaches. I'm going to say my daily thing and skedaddle out of here. Fire Morris, fire Robinson. They got to go. Have a good rest of your day.
Thanks, E. Guys, again, John Gruden is actively suing the NFL. What team in their right mind would hire him? I don't care if he's technically allowed to coach. What organization in their right mind, even in their wrong mind, would hire a coach who's suing the league? How is that going to go for you? Here's a hint. Not well. So, E, I get your point, but come on, man. 404-726-0929. When we get back, we'll switch gears for just a quick second. Hawks with another big win last night. Can they actually put this thing together with Trae Young on the sideline for a couple more weeks? And then we'll get back to your calls, 404-726-0929. We'll get producer G involved as well. We got a lot to do before 10 o'clock here on Chris Thomas Tonight. We'll get back into the Falcons conversation in just a couple of minutes here on Chris Thomas Tonight. Turtle, great job on the phones. Once again, we have taken all the calls over the last couple of days, even going back to Sunday on the Falcons flyover. And I'm right here with you. You guys know it. I say it all the time. I am two things, Atlanta. You know what they are. I'm emotional and I'm petty. So I'm right there with you, Falcons fans. And we'll take more of your calls coming up at 404-726-0929. Wanted to get our next guest on, though, because the Hawks might be figuring something out here without Trae Young. And maybe there's long-term implications for that. Maybe there's not. But a ton to get to in the association, so let's waste no time. Welcome in our buddy Keith Smith of Spotrac and Front Office Show. Keith, before we get here to the Hawks locally, the big news out of the NBA today, Mavs move on from Nico Harrison after just a disastrous calendar year for him. Are you surprised? And where does a team that started off, I think they're what, 3-8, go from here?
Yeah, I'm not surprised at all. I think we're at a position where they were just, they had to do this. The fan base had lost all trust in the Mavericks. And once you get there, you know, with your fans just kind of giving up on you, you're going to lose them even more. I think it was the other night, their home game. That was the first home game they didn't sell out in over 24 years. So that gives you a sense of how down these folks were. I mean, this is a team with Cooper Flagg, the number one pick, and they were just done with Nico Harrison. And now where they go from here, we'll see. They didn't hire anybody new. They promoted Michael Finley and Matt Ricciardi are going to take over as the kind of co-GMs for the time being. And we'll see ultimately how that comes together for them. But they're in a position where they've got a lot to figure out. They've got moves they're going to have to make. They're going to have to consider, all right, do we need to move on from some of these vets on the roster, or you know, do we see this through? And that's going to really set the tone for them moving forward.
I just remain shocked by what Miami's able to do year in and year out. Huge win for them last night. Is that just because of the coach? Is it the total Heat culture thing? Miami off to another hot start with really, Keith, not a bona fide star on the team.
Yeah, you know, what's interesting is this time around, Eric Spoelstra came in, and every coach, you know, if you had the Media Day bingo card, everybody's going to play faster, right? That's like the number one thing every team says. Well, after years and years under Eric Spoelstra, every year, they're like a bottom three team in pace, and they play just so slow and so deliberate. And now they are the fastest team in the NBA. They're getting up and down the floor. They're running this really fun offense that involves a ton of ball and player movement, very little screening, very little of the handoff game that we're used to with the Heat. So it's been really interesting to watch that evolve. And you're absolutely right. I mean, they find these guys, they develop these guys, you know, as good or better than, you know, just about everybody else does. When you consider almost every year, they're picking fairly low in the draft.
All right. What is the, I know this is a tough question, but I asked this to every NBA correspondent I've had on the last couple of weeks. With Vijay Edgecombe and the rest of that young crew, Tyrese Maxey, playing so well for Philly, what is the future for Embiid?
Yeah, it's really tough. And with the news today that, you know, he's back out again and he's got this knee issue that has cropped back up one more time, that's not good. You know, they're managing him. They're doing everything they need to do to kind of keep him healthy, and they can't even get it done. Like, we're now with him back on the shelf again. We don't have any kind of update on how long that'll be for, but none of this is leading anywhere good for the Sixers. Now with Maxey and Edgecombe, those guys are fun. You know, they're good players. They're really going to be, you know, fun guys to monitor and watch grow. And I think what Nick Nurse has done a nice job of is he is basically coaching almost kind of two different teams right now. He's running one kind of way when it's Embiid and those guys are available to him, and then he's running another kind of way when it is, you know, I got to run with my young guns and run with my guards, and it's really working for them. And I think what you're seeing is, all right, we don't know what we're going to get out of Paul George and out of Joel Embiid the rest of the way, but we're going to keep moving forward with our young kids, and we feel pretty good about this young core, and that should at least have Philadelphia fans feeling pretty good about it, knowing, you know, where they were previous. You're in kind of a tough spot being so reliant on guys who might not have been on the floor.
You think John Morant gets traded?
I do. I think we finally hit a point where it's time. I think, you know, with John Morant, we're in a position where it is eventually you kind of cross the point of no return, and he's not happy there. They don't seem super happy with him. I think why they're saying they're not going to trade him is because they want to make sure they get something of value. They don't want it to be in a position where, well, we had to trade him, so, you know, this is kind of where we're going with it. So I think we're in a spot where they want to be, you know, able to get real good value for John Morant. But I do think we've reached the end point with him in Memphis.
Yeah, it's basically a situation there. I don't think either side wants anything to do, to your point, with the other one. The team that they're facing tonight on the road is the New York Knicks. Mike Brown, talk about coming into a job with heavy expectations, but so far so good, 6-3. Do you buy that he could keep this thing going in a way that Tibbs couldn't, where they were out of gas at the end?
Yeah, I do, because he isn't driving the guys into the ground, right? He is really making sure that these guys are playing, you know, a good amount of minutes each night, and that's huge. He's also kind of modernized the offense, where it's not a, you know, Jalen Brunson pounding the ball for 20 seconds of the shot clock until, you know, they kind of set up an action. They're just getting in their stuff. They're moving. They're trusting guys like Bridges and Ananobi and Towns with the ball in their hands more than just, all right, We have to run everything through Jalen Brunson, and that's going to be big for them. Their defense has been a little up and down, but I think that'll settle in here eventually. And I think once it does, we're going to be in a spot where we really see the Knicks really kind of get going. They're off to a good start, but we know they can be even better than they've been so far.
Talking all things NBA and Hawks with our buddy Keith Smith. Make sure you check out his work and find him online on socials as well, Keith Smith NBA. All right, here in Atlanta, a bunch of stuff to talk about. Nice couple of games here for the Hawks. Vic Krejci out of nowhere goes for 28 against the Clippers last night. They stave off a triple-double with 35 from James Harden. Back-to-back wins in Hollywood before going to Sacramento tomorrow, a bad Sacramento team. Do you think that Quinn Snyder's found something that could help keep this team afloat? I think, Keith, we're looking at no Trae Young for at least two or three more weeks.
Yeah, I think, this is – you're getting a glimpse of, all right, if they ever did want to move Trae Young, this is what it could look like with the Hawks post Trae Young. And it's not – he's the big name, right, that's been out, but they've also been without – Nickeil Alexander-Walker, who is, more or less functioning as Young's backup. So that is, something that we're going to be kind of keeping an eye on here. When he gets back, but this is a good team. It's a deep team. And I think they're starting to finally kind of find who they want to be identity wise. And I thought last night's game, Vic Krejci coming off the bench and going crazy. My buddy Trevor Lane from Front Office Show and I were calling that game on the NBA strategy stream on League Pass. And we were just like, what is going on here? And he made everything, but it's a pretty good team with pretty good depth. And that can go a long way in the regular season towards having a good, successful year.
How do you feel like Quinn Snyder has done so far here in Atlanta? It's a tough question because he's dealt with so many injuries, but it feels like this is the first year he's really gotten a full offseason to try to put in exactly what he wants to do with a lot more talent being added in the offseason.
Yeah, I think he's done a nice job. I think Quinn Snyder is one of the better coaches in the NBA. I think he runs good stuff. I think he can tailor an offense to do a lot of different things depending on what the personnel is that's available to him. And I think that's a very underrated thing. We get with coaches, like we kind of just talked about it with the Knicks, right? Tibbs is going to play a certain way. And if the personnel fits that, great. If it doesn't, it's not going to go very well. And with the Hawks and Quinn Snyder, what you're seeing is, all right, we'll play different ways, right? We'll run the offense through Jalen Johnson. Last night was a lot of, we're going to put the ball in Dyson Daniels' hands and let him do a lot of the creation for us. And those are the things you have to be able to do is, change up to your personnel, because if you get stuck too much on, all right, this is how we're going to play, if you don't have the right guys to play that way, it doesn't really matter.
All right, before I let you go, a couple of off-the-court questions. Do you think this is the last we've heard of the gambling situation, the poker situation? Was that a couple of ex-players caught up in something way over their heads? Or do you think it's possible, Keith, that there is something more to this story that could affect more of the league?
Yeah, I want to believe that's it. We're not going to have to deal with any more of this. But I live in a very hyper realism world, and I think we are probably going to hear more of this. I think the gambling culture is so embedded now, and it's, I always say, it was one thing when you were in a position where, all right, I make a bet, I got to drive down to my local bar and meet my guy in the back room and kind of get my bet on the board, and if I don't pay it off, they're going to break my arm. Now it's, all right, we're just going to take your house, right? And it's now guys get caught up. And what happens with these players sometimes is, I think they're very innocently, they're telling a buddy like, yeah, man, player X, our superstar, he's feeling under the weather and he's not going to play today. That's going to mean it's a tough game. Well, then their friends turn that into, hey, that information's not out there. Let me turn that into a bet. And that's where now all of a sudden it's, man, you shared inside information. And then when you have things like, all right, were you going under? Were you removing yourself from games and that sort of stuff? That's what gets scary. So I'm hopeful, that the NBA is going to do what they need to do, and the government as well, and they'll crack down. But I do think we're going to probably see, more of this, unfortunately, before it kind of all goes away.
And before I let you go, we talked about the Clippers earlier. The Hawks played them last night. Do you believe that the commissioner is going to levy some harsh punishment on Steve Ballmer and company?
Yeah, I think we're going to see here. I think what's really interesting is there's a lot of folks who are very upset that nothing has happened yet in their minds, right? They're like, how are we not done, you know, with this? Why have you not taken action? But as Adam Silver has said, is like, you know, hey, we have to do a very thorough investigation on this to understand what did and didn't happen here, because the last thing they're going to do is start levying what will be major, major punishments unless they are certain. So they're going to take their time. It's not hurting anybody to take their time right now. So I do think, you know, if they come to a place, you're going to see probably some of the most harsh punishments we've seen handed down. They went after the Timberwolves pretty good when they did it with Joe Smith. But I think this is, you know, kind of a chance for the league to set a, you know, set a precedent of do not do this. If you do this, we are going to, you know, really kind of hand your franchise a penalty that you're going to have a hard time to come back from.
The one thing, just real quick, that I don't understand is why Steve Ballmer went so quickly on the offensive before, you know, even all the evidence was put out against him. It just seemed like that was such a crucial misstep in order to try to get this thing, you know, to go away. Like, why would you stake your neck out there when there's so much damning evidence saying what you did?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's tough because, you know, I know people who very much, you know, say this with full belief of he did that because he is, hey, we did not do this, right? We are okay. And that is where, you know, there are people who are saying like, hey, it does not, you know, Matt, like this is not a thing that happened. And then there are others who are like, yeah, well, that's, you know, textbook 101. When they attack you, you attack back. So, you know, love. I think, you know, again, much like the gambling, I think we've got a lot more to come with this story before we hear the end of it.
Keith, thank you so much for the time. Great stuff. Appreciate it as always. We'll be checking out your work.
Absolutely. I appreciate you having me. Thank you so much.
All right. That is Keith Smith there, front office show, Spotrac NBA. All right. We'll take more of your calls, 404-726-0929. If you didn't get in, Falcons fans, back to the phones. Can Michael Penix Jr. be fixed? This coaching staff's got 8 games to try to save the season. And also Garrett has 5 Falcons true and false questions for me. We'll do all that next. Back with you here on Sports Radio 92.9. The game got a busy couple of segments here for Producer G. As we took so many of your calls, we haven't gotten to the true or false questions or the producer six packs. So we'll get those in the next hour and 20 minutes as well. We'll also let you hear our conversation with Will McFadden. All you Falcons fans who want the latest from Flowery Branch, Will is the senior reporter, writer, editor, you name it. He does it all. He and Tori McElhaney for AtlantaFalcons.com. So he has all the boots on the ground report, everything that you need to hear. Garrett, let's settle a debate real quick before we get to some true and false questions. Because for those who don't know, most of you do know by now, but I am from New York, not New York State, New York City, but that's where I grew up. And around this time every year, we know that it starts to get a little chilly out there. Not so much here in Atlanta, although these past 2 days have been an outlier, but it's usually, you know, I'd say Atlanta's a good, Garrett, I'd say 15-ish, maybe sometimes 20 degrees warmer on average than New York during this time of year. But I have got, okay, so full disclosure, I wear shorts. I do not wear pants unless I have to. I am a pants mandated only situation. So if I have a wedding or if I have a, you know, a nice event I need to go to, I will, of course, put on pants. I'm not, you know, trying to make myself look like a fool, but I will only wear pants when it is absolutely necessary. Other than that, I am that guy. I wear shorts. So I have shorts on today. And I know some of you are out there going, oh, Turtle, it is so cold outside. How can you wear shorts? Because I can. It's not that cold out. I am used, and I think it's largely to do with where I'm from. To me, this is mild, moderate. This is not freezing. This is not, you know, 10 degrees. This is not a wind chill factor of -3. This is moderate.
It's not bad. No, yesterday was cold. Yesterday was cold. Well, but that was also, I left here.
The wind. It was the wind.
The wind. Yeah. No, when I left here, when I left the studio last night, I covered Hawks. When I left the studio at about 2-ish in the morning, It was feels like temperature was 19 degrees.
Okay, so that was cold. I wasn't out that late. I got done here at 10.
But that's cold. 19 in Atlanta,
that's
is cold.
Fair. No, yeah, that's fair.
45 degrees, 30 degrees, I can that's fine. It's more just the quick turnaround from when it was 60 degrees the other day to now 30. That's where it kind of punches.
And it's going
to
be back to 65 tomorrow.
Oh, and it's going to be so great. Yeah. I love it.
It's going to be back to 65 tomorrow.
We'll
but
be
just,
fine.
But just the amount of people, literally people stopping me on the street outside here at Colony Square. I had one dude come up to me. He's like, man, he's like, I'm so cold. I'm cold looking at you. He's like, how are you doing this right now? I'm like,
see,
I don't
know. Not today,
it's,
though.
It's not that bad.
Yesterday, fine. Not today. Today's fine.
It's not that bad.
It's really not. I feel like most things with weather and, you know, chill factor, cold weather, it's all mental. A lot of it's mental. A good bit.
And also, for the average person, which I am not, I get maybe here in Metro Atlanta, but I even walk to work.
Yeah, and then you're working, you're moving, and you're fine.
But like for the majority of the people, though, they're just getting in and out of their car. Mm-hmm. And they're still complaining that it's so cold.
Yeah, some people are also just a little soft when it comes to that. And look, I'm that way sometimes. Sometimes. Not often. But I will say, on a Friday night when I'm covering high school football games, I'm a little soft. That's when,
you
but that's
bundle,
also because
you
you're standing.
Up.
But it's because you're standing there.
Yeah.
And you're on a field, and I'm like, I got my phone out, and I'm like, I'm tweeting and doing everything else like during games. I'll get soft there. Or if I'm like doing Georgia Tech. Like, I'm at Georgia Tech, I'm at Bobby Dodd Stadium, and I'm there. I don't know if you've ever been to their press box before, but it's a wind tunnel. And if it is even slightly windy, it is freezing cold in
Fun
there.
Fun fact, I have never been inside a press box.
No
ever,
kidding.
Because I've never been a reporter.
Oh, I love press boxes.
I've never, and like with Dukes and Bell and stuff, like we don't go to the, we never went to press boxes.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, but when you're in a press box, it's a completely different way to watch a football game or a baseball game or a basketball game or anything because you can't cheer. You know, you get in trouble for that.
Yeah, you essentially have to be silent.
You have to sit there. And I can, I feel some of my emotions and stuff. I'm like, I have to like hold them down.
Well, because you're covering feeling. The teams you grew up rooting for.
Sure.
Some of them.
Yeah, some of them. And it's like, and it's fun. And I enjoy it. And going in a press box is always.
Is there a dress code for a press box? Speaking of dress codes.
Yeah, I mean, sort of.
Like, could you wear in a press box a polo with khaki shorts?
Yeah.
You could wear.
You probably shouldn't wear shorts, truthfully. I don't generally wear shorts. I've worn them before. I feel a little uncomfortable. But I also think that I'm also different than you in the fact that I'll wear pants. You know, I wear khakis and stuff like that all the time. I'm a prep star. That's who I am. But it's like, if it's one of those types of events, then I'm not gonna wear shorts. I don't think shorts are appropriate personally. But that's also my opinion.
No,
I've
but I was just wondering if it's a rule,
like not a hard and fast.
Not
it's
a
kind
hard
of an
and fast
it's
rule.
It's an unspoken type of thing.
But like, let's say you were covering. Let's say it's the first week of high school season. And you're covering a game on the sidelines.
Oh, no, that's fine.
You could wear shorts.
Yeah, that's
right?
fine.
Yeah.
Now, if you cover, I've seen different levels of dressiness, I should say, for different sports. Like the NFL, people wear like jackets and ties and stuff like that for those games. Baseball, you see more shorts. You see a lot of blue jeans. You see a lot of more casual types of attire. Basketball, it's very, like, I don't know, modern sort of formal. You know, where people have sneakers and like the nice jeans and everything. It just varies per sport. Football, I see all kinds of different things. College football varies heavily.
I wouldn't do
Who knows?
Well. I wouldn't do well in those environments.
Yeah.
I don't wear pants. I'm not just, putting pants on, man.
Just not a pants guy.
I'm just not a pants guy. Never have been, never will be.
I respect that, though.
I don't like pants. It's too restrictive. I got big tree trunk, thick legs. Jeans don't fit right. The length and the waist don't add up. I'm kind of built like a box. It's it's not the easiest thing for me to find pants that fit because usually it's like the waist will fit or the length won't fit or vice versa. It's a struggle, man. It's a struggle, but it's my cross.
You're like Abe, like in the fact that I've never seen him in pants. I rarely see.
No,
Abe.
I don't think I've really ever.
He
seen
wears
him in pants
athletic
either.
Shorts and some kind of an athletic T-shirt. When I've seen him. when I have seen him in jeans or something where it's like he is wearing like a button down or something like that, it just, I'm like, what is this? What's going on here?
I think the only time I ever saw Abe dress up was for 92.9 The Game night.
I actually think you're right. It was one of those.
I think that was the only time.
That's pretty much the only time that you'll ever see.
I wore shorts to that, though. I wore shorts to that. I did wear a button down, nice button down covering up. Like, I had my 92.9 The Game shirt on with a nice button down over it and some khaki shorts. But so I didn't look like a slob, but, you know.
That's fair. I didn't have pants.
It
just depends on what you want to do. I mean, to each their own.
I never picture myself having a job where I have to wear pants. Let's put it that way. Because I don't like, fun fact for me, I mean, maybe this will change later on in my career. I don't have the same, like, passion. I know that's where all the money is, so maybe that'll change for TV that I do for radio. Like, I have no interest in getting into TV in my career. Again, maybe that'll change, but.
See, I'm just told I have a face for radio, so I think I'm in the spot that I need to be.
There are a lot of guys on TV that have no business being on TV.
Amen. No, if anybody out there, I'll come in. I'll do a little guest spot. Just hit me up.
And then he'll wear pants. All right, with that said, let's get to five true and false.
All right, Chris. First thing that I had to put on this list, just because it's the first thing that I've been seeing on social media, especially this week, a lot of Brads and Chads from Podcast University all over the country, and it's getting a little annoying. So I want to ask you, I want to bring you to the mothership, the flagship of the Atlanta Falcons, and ask you this. Did the Falcons make the right decision halfway through the season now to trade a future first-round pick to go acquire James Pierce Jr.? True or false,
they made the correct decision? True. Terry Fontenot and Raheem Morris were operating that the same mindset we've been talking about all night. They knew they didn't have time to waste. That's not their pick as far as they're concerned. Because if they get that pick, if they get this season wrong, they wouldn't be there to make it anyway. So you might as well take advantage of it and try to stack the deck of cards as much as you could in your favor. They had an extra first-round pick next year to use it. They used it.
Yeah.
Like, everything else be damned. So I say absolutely true. And he's been pretty good. I mean, they're coming, both of them, Jalen Walker especially, is coming on over the last couple of weeks since he's been back. So I had no issue with it then, because pass rush, we know how bad it's been here in Atlanta. Don't have an issue with it now.
Yeah, 3 sacks in his last 2 games does Jalen Walker have. James Pierce had a sack fumble in the most recent game, had a fumble recovery against the Patriots. I mean, he's had a very good season, and people who criticize the amount of tackles, the amount of sacks that he has, he is one of the best rookies as far as pass rushing goes, in terms of total pressures and stuff like that. And it's all lining up. His QB pressure rate is about 13-14%, which is very good. Let's just put it that way. Really good player, but the thing is, this team has 29 sacks right now. They are on pace to break the franchise record by leaps and bounds. 48 is the record. It was set back in 2004. 55 is what they are on pace for as of now. Acquiring James Pierce had a lot to do with that. True or false? The Atlanta Falcons can win their next 3 games. Will win their next 3 games.
It's Carolina, it's the Jets, and it's the Saints.
Correct.
Okay. No, false. Because why would I believe that? Because they've played close against good teams? Well, what happened when the games were close? They blew every single one of them. On what planet do I have any reason to believe that this team is going to win any game that they play? They've lost that respect for me this year. I don't believe going into the Falcons, let me say it this way declaratively in a nice soundbite. I do not believe going into any game for the rest of the season that the Falcons should win the game. They could win any game for the rest of the season, but I do not believe that the Falcons should win any game for the rest of the year.
Okay. Fair. Little upsetting. Fair.
It's where we are, dude. 3-6. We
got our Falcons true false questions. Number 3. You were on the phone today with Brian Daboll to bring him in as some kind of consultant, something. Just get him in the building, see what he can figure out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 1,000%. No, one better. I'm firing Zach Robinson and offering him the job spot on. Sign the deal, Dabes. You saw what he did with Josh Allen in Buffalo. And then you saw what he did this year with Jackson Dart in New York. The reason that he lost his job in New York was not because of the quarterback. Ironically, the quarterback was the lone bright spot in New York. Bring him in here to fix Michael Penix Jr. yesterday. As far as I'm concerned, Brian Daboll should be the next offensive coordinator of the Atlanta Falcons. I don't care who the head coach is. I'm not giving him the head coaching job, but I'm certainly giving him the offensive coordinator job right now.
I do think there is a world that Joe Brady leaves the Bills and goes and gets a head coaching job somewhere. I would not be surprised that that happens. And if that's the case, I would not be surprised if Brian Daboll goes back home, you know, goes and coaches.
Well, yeah. Where would you rather go?
Josh Allen and that team. I mean, who's done a really good. I mean, look, he turned them into a bona fide contender. And I think he had a lot to do with the development of Josh Allen up there. And so did Joe Brady, all due respect. And I think Brady's going to go get another job, and Daboll's going to come back, and he's going to reset, get another job. Where that ends up being, who knows. But I'd say that there were a couple offensive-minded head coaches that might get the axe this season who may do pretty well to come here in Atlanta. There are some really interesting pieces here in Atlanta. You have some talent. You have some really good players. If the Falcons end up making a change, there are some people that they could definitely call and kind of reset the bill pretty quickly here for the Falcons. All right, number four, Jalen Walker. He's missed a couple games, and he's coming on as of late, but he could still win the Defensive Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, absolutely. He's got eight games. If he plays over the next eight games like he has in the past two or three, heck yeah. Buckle up, buddy.
Yeah, last two games.
Yeah, I'm all on that train.
He's got three sacks. He's got a forced fumble. He's got a fumble recovery. He's been about as good as you could hope for. He is the guy who they drafted at number 15. He's an elite run stopper. He is showing some capability on the edge, and the way that he has developed and the way he's getting after quarterbacks, he's looking like the steal of the first round right now. At 15, he was very surprising that he dropped that far. But good for the Falcons and good for them. Good for Jalen Walker. He's doing really good job. And it's unfortunate that a lot of the other negative things around the Falcons right now are overshadowing just how good he's doing. He's got four sacks on the season. He could really turn it all around for this team. All right, number five, Falcons will reach eight wins.
Right now, false.
I can look at the schedule and I could say I can point to five games that I'd say that the Falcons have a decent enough chance.
You think they're going to win six out of their last eight games?
I'm not saying they will. I'm saying that they would likely be favored in about four to five games.
So?
I'm just saying.
Like, so?
I'm just saying. They were also favored in Carolina. Right. They were also favored against the Miami Dolphins here a couple of weeks ago, their last home game. But they're going to be favored in a lot of these games as of right now.
Garrett,
that would get them to eight wins.
Right now, no. They need six more wins to get to eight. It ain't happening. No. Sorry.
They need five. More to get to eight.
Five more to get to
eight.
Oh, three. Yeah.
Five more to get to eight.
No.
So five wins. I don't know. It's not going to be enough to get to the postseason. You got to go
so
probably 7-1.
Sweep the Saints, beat Carolina, beat Tampa.
Now, I think they split. So when you project these games, I'd say they can absolutely split with the Bucs. They can do that. And they can sweep the Saints. I think that's not implausible. You would split with the parent Panthers. That's not implausible either. The Jets are a dumpster fire. They're worse than the Falcons are right now.
Jets are on a two-game winning streak. Falcons are on a four-game losing streak.
Yeah.
Like, again, I'm not giving – they haven't earned it.
Who are the Jets' wins? They beat the Browns, and then who was the other one? It was a surprising one.
I think the Dolphins.
No, it wasn't. No, they lost the Dolphins. They lost the Dolphins. It was somebody else. I remember watching, and it was just a dumpster fire.
Oh, it was the Bengals.
Game. The Bengals. That's what it was. Yeah, that with Joe Flacco just became – he turned into a pumpkin there, and it was just not a very good situation. All right, last one, and this is quick, and this might be a segue here for you. Michael Penix is still the future of this franchise.
Yeah, yes, 100%. It's not even close. It's not him, it's the coaching, period. Good job, G, on the five Falcons true and false questions. We'll get a producer six-pack coming up. When we get back to the phones, 404-726-0929. Can this thing get turned around? The coaches are in desperation mode. They need to get Michael Penix Jr. back on track, or I believe pink slips are a-coming. Do you believe they can do it? Plus, what did Raheem Morris have to say? He met the media. We'll let you hear sounds from him as well. But back to your calls first and foremost, 404-726-0929 on the state of the Falcons. Can they get Michael Penix Jr. back on track? Could they possibly save their season? We'll talk about it with you on the phones next.